This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Our guest of the day, evening, or whenever you listen to this show, and on whatever planet, Micah Hanks is here, and he has his avatar of him smiling. Well, that's really a smile, it's like a half smile. I think you're trying to channel the Mona Lisa or something.
Perhaps. You know, I'm really glad that you noticed the smile, Gene. Being a friend, I figured you would, because most people always comment on my eyebrows. They say your eyebrows, you should keep a safe 3-foot distance from people at all times, because those eyebrows could knock somebody's, you know, block off. I don't think they're that overpowering, but, you know, that's what I always hear from people. So I have to be very mindful of my physiology, I guess.
We have slick back hair. And about the eyebrows, you can't just move one of them up like Mr. Spock could.
Well, I do. I guess that's my problem. They must think I'm a Vulcan, Gene. That's what it is.
Well, we have to adjust the ears. You do have kind of that Vulcan look. If we just do something to the ears, I think we'll have it.
Yeah, that's what I've been aiming for all along.
We had a friend of yours on the show a couple of weeks ago, Joshua Warren.
Oh, yeah. You know, Josh is a fellow who I happen to be not only friends with for many years, because he is an Asheville native, and so it was, I guess, kind of by more than just chance, perhaps by some divine fortitude or something, that we would come to know each other. Being from slightly different disciplines, he is someone who is, you know, very much into the kind of the paranormal world, whereas I've become more hardline science with, you know, keeping one foot in ufology over the years. But as time goes on, I really consider myself more a disciple of William R. Corliss. But I'll tell you, people may not know this about Warren. He was the first guy that introduced me to William R. Corliss. We'd go to his house, and he and I would catch up on Monday nights, and you'd usually be sitting there drinking bourbon when I was in my early 20s. What I loved about Josh was he had all these great books, and he had William R. Corliss. For anyone out there in the listening audience who doesn't know who that was, he was an American physicist who was, as I hope to be or aspire to be a disciple of his, he was a disciple of Charles Fort. Whereas Fort liked to kind of smack the scientific establishment, Corliss borrowed heavily from scientific literature, as Fort had done, but he relied more on, I think, scientific consensus while highlighting anomalies in nature. You know, he'd do the source books. Gene, did you ever read any of those?
Probably a long, long time ago. Why don't you summarize it quickly and let's move on?
Yeah, sure. I mean, very quickly, there are these general source books which you can buy online, and I'd highly recommend them. But then there were the individual source books that would talk about, for instance, geophysical anomalies, astronomical anomalies, archaeological anomalies. And he was, again, just a person who had a broad interest in all areas of the sciences and the mysteries that lie therein. So Josh Warren was the first guy that introduced me to those books, and I'm still a fan of those to this day. And occasionally, when he's around, I still see Josh here in the Asheville area. But he's usually traveling. And so am I.
Well, William Corliss died in 2011, for those who want to look him up. But he was around quite a few years. He was born in 1926, so he lived a good long life. Now, the reason I bring up Mr. Warren here is that he had his friend outfit me with one of his wishing machines, a radionics device, or a Hieronymus box, as it were. So now we're going to see what that does to me, whether it sends weird creatures of the night into my bedroom, other than the little white dog that occasionally sticks his nose into other people's business.
Well, I guess we'll just have to see how the chips fall on that one, huh?
Yeah, let's just see what happens. I'm not prejudging this. I'm just saying it's here. It was set up in accordance with the instructions, and we'll let it run. After a few months, we'll see what we report, if it makes things different or better or whatever. But we want to talk about something else, because you brought something to my mind here that I had forgotten. And it kind of, sort of, begins in the early days of UFO studies. I know a lot of times with cases, we're trying to move away from that, like we've moved away from Roswell. We don't cover a lot of these things. And we never really got into Aztec that much, although we've had some shows on it. But something you reminded me here about is mystery satellites, which Major Donald Kehoe mentioned in his various books. And that kind of disappeared over the years. We stopped hearing about it. Now, this happened, correct me if I'm wrong, Micah, this happened before we had our own satellites, before Sputnik was launched. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. We're seeing, for instance, in the literature, essentially the observation of objects orbiting Earth, often by very qualified astronomers, that dated back to the early 1950s. And it's interesting because, well, you may remember a few years ago I wrote this book called The Ghost Rockets, which begins with the Scandinavian phenomenon, but then I move forward and I find all these very similar reports that over the years, over the decades, even up to the present day, there's a certain continuity to them. Well, with this mystery satellite thing, and I brought this to the program today, by the way, just because I knew that you would appreciate this often excluded discussion as it relates to Donald Kehoe, and in fact, actually a phenomenon, perhaps a celestial phenomenon, or several of them, that goes even further back to the middle 1800s. You'll begin to find, if you really dig into the history, when you're investigating these kind of things, that there is often a certain kind of continuity, and people will see a phenomenon like this, and the way that it was being widely reported in the newspapers beginning, around 1954 and 55, but the earlier reports go back a couple of years before that, as we'll delve into later. But yeah, there's definitely a continuity. The phenomena as it began in the 50s certainly seemed to represent, again, whatever they were, objects that were in Earth orbit, but we shouldn't have had the technology at that time, at least not for a few more years, to be able to put something up there into an orbit, let alone a retrograde orbit, which is what many of these objects appear to be doing in the years that would follow.
Now, some of Kehoe's speculation included motherships. You think that if flying saucers came here from other worlds, they travel in big, maybe city-sized spaceships, and then as they approach the planet, they would orbit the planet and send their scout ships to Earth or whatever planet they were visiting.
Yeah. Yeah, that's correct. It's not that far out an idea, and a lot of people have entertained it to this day. People have looked at that idea, and we could put it like this, Gene. If we look at, for instance, recent studies, which, of course, look at over the period of 12 months, 1 year, what happens to an astronaut when we put them in space? Some of the most fascinating studies we've seen, of course, involve twins, where we see the biological differences between identical twins in which, gut bacteria, brain function, eyesight. Of course, we know with regard to musculature that there's a certain, propensity for atrophy in a zero-gravity environment like this. But we're seeing that, again, the effects on biological organisms is pretty great. And so, for a number of years, I've kind of thought the same way. I mean, would it be more likely, perhaps, that whatever the UFO phenomena were, let's suspend disbelief depending on our perspectives on what UFOs are or may be or may not be. Let's go with this conventional idea that Kehoe was operating under in the 1950s, that we were indeed looking at something extraterrestrial in origin. His theory had been that, maybe scout ships would be more likely as far as what we saw in our atmosphere. And even leading scientists of that era had said, we're not so sure that a living organism could pass through the Van Allen radiation belts. We now know that, of course, that can be done. But at that time, they weren't certain that was even a plausible scenario. And so the idea of a scout ship, perhaps remotely controlled, a drone in other words, being sent into Earth's atmosphere from an object parked outside our atmosphere or orbiting the Earth, that was really kind of a leading theory among those who were willing to take seriously the idea of UFO phenomena back in the early days. Although now we know, of course, that if we can get around that, in likelihood, other biological entities may as well. We still have to deal with the idea of such entities with whatever technology at their disposal traversing great distances through space and time in order to come here and interact with us. So this is one of the things that has led Jacques Vallée and a number of others over the years to be less, warm, Gene, to that idea of the ETH, the ET hypothesis. But I think that, again, however you want to look at it, it seems like there is a strong likelihood that other intelligence elsewhere in the universe would be doing things at some stage in their development, which in truth is kind of similar to what we've done. We send robots to Mars to examine the Martian soil. We send Voyager, and we send all kinds of probes out into deep space to take photographs of our solar system and also places even further out.
We've got more to come with Micah Hanks of the Graylian Report. Mystery satellites, something that we don't talk about much anymore. Are they gone? More to come. with Gene and Micah. You're in
the Paracast.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I have problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug-out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Is negative content or comments on the web affecting your personal or professional reputation? Unfavorable comments, embarrassing pictures, videos, legal documents, and negative articles can ruin your personal life, your career, or your business. It happens a lot, and it's just not fair. But what can you do? ReputationDefender.com can help protect your good name. Get a free consultation now. Call 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Call right now for a free expert reputation analysis. It's easy to squash the unfair attacks with our patented system, and the analysis is absolutely free. Make the best things about you jump out in searches. Protect your personal and professional reputation, your business, and your income. Get your free reputation analysis from ReputationDefender.com right now. Call 800-831-0771. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com today.
Taking turmeric is good, but there's a problem with it. The active ingredient in turmeric, known as curcumin, is poorly absorbed into the cells due to its large particle size. But now, One Planet Nutrition has the answer for this powerful anti-inflammatory. Nanocurcumin, a nanoparticle curcumin which absorbs over 40 times better into your bloodstream. Discover more health benefits of nanocurcumin and nanocurcumin plus, now on sale at oneplanetnutrition.com. Use promo code GCN for your special discount at oneplanetnutrition.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So we continue with Micah Hanks. We're talking about, to start, mystery satellites and their implications, bringing back an old mystery that I haven't seen discussed in years. I do want to discuss this, though. We have a special feature of the show called The Paracast Plus. And to learn more, you go to plus, P-L-U-S dot theparacast.com. That's plus.theparacast.com. I got a letter the other day from a listener saying, how do you pay for it? Well, we've got two ways, basically. One is PayPal, because it uses the PayPal recurring payment system to handle your subscription. But if you don't have PayPal, there's an option to use a credit or debit card. Plus.theparacast.com. You get the After the Paracast podcast. You get the commercial-free version of this show and more stuff. Prices start just $1.49 a week. Our price, cheap. Micah Hanks is here. You've got a subscription kind of thing going on, too, with Graylian Report, don't you?
I do indeed, yeah, which is one reason I was so glad to see that you guys were doing the Paracast subscription situation as well, because it's always a great way to get people who really like the show a little more involved. So, yeah, kudos on that, Gene.
It's a way to give you a chance to really support the show because we give you extra stuff. And you can't give everything free. Otherwise, you can't pay the bills. You can't pay for all the equipment to run this show, and you can't pay for the food. Of course, if you, you know, maybe if you're a space person, you could use energy. One thing I want to ask, though, before we go on with mystery satellites, and that is, we look at all this UFO stuff in light of our own expectations. So we think, well, we're exploring other planets, we're using robots, and maybe they send robots here, and maybe we travel a long distance, we probably use a very large spaceship, and then it would send scout ships to an individual planet. But we're looking at that in terms of our science fiction concepts of space travel. We're looking at this as someone in the early 21st century. How are things going to be a couple of hundred years from now? Or 500 years from now? But we're assuming that technology would move in a way that we even understand. But what if we're dealing with space people who are thousands and thousands of years ahead of us? Would we even recognize their technology?
That's a really great point that you raise. You know, I was talking with our mutual friend Stanton Friedman back about a year ago. In fact, this very month a year ago. And as he and I were riding together out through the mountains of California, having not only enjoying the scenery, but having this great talk about some of the ufological icons of yesteryear, whom many never even talk about today, like Alan Hendry, one of my favorites. He was discussing some of these things, and we stopped in Riverside and had lunch. It's a funny thing because you could look at this phenomenon like UFOs and say, oh, you know, visitors from space, which Stanton has maintained for a long time. And then you've got people like me who might come along and be a little more skeptical and say, well, I don't know about the visitor from space angle. Could be any number of things. But how likely is it that extraterrestrial biological entities would come to Earth? We see our drones. We see our probes. We see our landing rovers and things that we put up on other planets. And like you say, as far thinking as we think that we are, as far out there as we think we're getting in terms of, well, then aliens would probably do the same thing, right? Well, then look at a technology. Hundreds, if not, like you say, thousands of years more advanced than ours. Let's at least, you know, conceive of a technology that could survive without the mutually assured self-destruction and things that Sagan warned about and many others over the years. Let's say that they evolved differently and that they were less likely to engage in warfare, as we humans have done. Yeah, we could absolutely still be dealing with an actual physical presence or something that may transcend physicality altogether, but nonetheless is a presence that is here, which exceeds all of our expectations based on that anthropomorphization, I guess, of what we're doing. You know, we can't help but think essentially like humans, because that's kind of what we are, right? We're humans, I think, most of us at least.
Well, the other assumption here is that they would be humanoid at least, and that might be possible. I'm not going to dismiss that possibility. But what would the human race be like 500,000 years from now, or a million years from now? How can we even predict what form they take? Obviously, in Star Trek, we have individuals becoming pure energy. So what this may mean is that what we see as UFOs or space people might be, number one, play acting. They're trying to appear in a way we understand, or our subconscious has to manage all this information it can't comprehend, so it alters what you see. So we go back to the 1950s. Of course, there were cases before that, and we want to get into that. But we go back to the 1950s, and we think, okay, satellites. That's near-term technology. But let's go on. Why did Kehoe get involved in this? What kind of cases did he glom onto?
Well, you know, Kehoe is one of these interesting guys. I own a lot of his books, and really, I mean, as much as he was one of the preeminent UFO investigators of his age, as you know, a lot of modern authorities on the subject don't reference Kehoe as much. Much as I mentioned Alan Hendry, there are a lot of luminaries of the ufological past which are kind of overlooked these days, which is unfortunate because there were a lot of great thinkers with a lot of great ideas. And Kehoe, again, he was very beholden to this extraterrestrial hypothesis. But what got him interested in these satellites, I think, really takes us back to 1953. And at some point, I do want to go even further back. But let's get the core story as it relates to UFOs down first. Lincoln LaPaz, of course, he had been part of the investigation into these green fireballs that started appearing right around 1946, 47, 48. Around 1953, LaPaz purportedly saw some strange object visible only through satellite that was orbiting Earth. And Kehoe had actually written about this a number of decades later, commenting that during 1953, the Air Force began experiments with new long-range radar equipment, and while making the initial tests, Air Force operators were astonished to pick up a gigantic object orbiting near the equator. And it was estimated, Gene, that around the time, the speed of this object was about 18,000 miles per hour, and the Air Force had checked this repeatedly, and it seemed to show that the tracking on this, in other words, the speed and the direction and everything, was indeed correct. In other words, some huge unknown thing, some object, was circling about 600 miles out. Now, some would dispute that estimate a little later. But what's interesting is that around the time of that initial discovery, which I suppose was probably based on the observation by LaPaz, there was another satellite object that again appears to join this object. They estimated this one was a little closer to Earth by about 200 miles, placing it at about 400 miles distant. So the Defense Department put together an emergency satellite detection project at White Sands, New Mexico. And on March 3, 1954, the following year, they released an official statement at the Joint Guided Missile Test Range at White Sands, New Mexico. This is really where it all gets interesting, because they officially announced what they think they're looking for, and this is what really got Kehoe interested in all this. Their statement was that the Armed Forces Army Ordnance state that we're searching for tiny moons or moonlets, as they called them, natural objects which had come in from space and were now orbiting the Earth. They'd not been tracked or discovered sooner, according to a spokesman, because they were following orbits near the equator, and the scarcity of observatories there had made them harder to locate. But also special automatic tracking cameras moving at the satellite speed would, they believed, be required to be able to see these, because such fast-moving objects gave off very little light, and ordinary telescopic cameras could not reveal them. And so it was the Armed Forces' intention at that time to locate any of these so-called moonlets, which could be used as space bases for launching missiles for the country's defense. So what's interesting about this is it implies that the Army was interested in seeing if the Earth had, if not a second moon by definition, little moonlets, space objects that had somehow entered Earth orbit that they could use for defense purposes.
Let's continue with this and Micah Hanks. More to come with Gene and Micah. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
The answer to being in control of your own healthcare is freedom from insurance. Become part of a group of self-pay patients that come together to share in each other's medical expenses. Individual share amounts begin at $107 a month and $347 for families. Choose from three health sharing programs. Holistic treatments may be eligible for sharing. See guidelines. Discount programs available for dental, vision, and pharmacy. Go to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
Have you ever wanted a shortcut to getting the underground secrets to making money online and seriously grow your business? Whether it's a new business, a part-time income, or an existing business, you have this incredible limited offer to get a copy of this Amazon best-selling book on .com success for free. Uncover the success factors to make your business ignite. Go to secretsignite.com. That's secretsignite.com. Get your free copy now. Go to secretsignite.com.
My computer is so slow, it's making me crazy.
I used to have that problem.
Did you quit using a computer, or did you buy a new one?
No, I called Geeks On Site. They made an appointment to visit my home and showed up the same day.
You mean they didn't ask you to bring your computer to a shop? That's what happened when I called a support company.
Geeks On Site can go to your home, or business, or even repair your computer online. They have 24/7 emergency service.
If you're having problems with your PC or Mac, call Geeks On Site. 1-800-591-1682. Our friendly certified computer repair
repair experts are available 24/7. Call now for a free diagnosis, 1-800-591-1682. Data recovery, virus removal, and maintenance for all laptops, desktops, printers, and networks. That's Geeks on Site for friendly, certified computer repair experts available 24/7 over the phone or in your home or business. Just call 1-800-591-1682. That's 1-800-591-1682. 1-800-591-1682.
If you or someone you love is suffering from hearing loss, please stay tuned for a special free offer from the makers of a revolutionary hearing breakthrough called Listen Clear. Listen Clear is precisely designed by top audio engineers to fit the ear almost invisibly, and it can be adjusted to find the perfect way to hear everything in every listening environment. Right now, we're offering absolutely free in-home trials to everyone who calls now. 1-800-713-3227. Call in the next 10 minutes and you'll also receive free shipping and free batteries for life. Listen Clear is lightweight and practically invisible, so people won't notice when you're wearing it. So again, if you or someone you love is suffering from hearing loss, please give them or yourself this life-changing 100% free in-home trial with free shipping and free batteries for life. For free information, call now. 1-800-713-3227. That's 1-800-713-3227. 1-800-713-3227.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com. ParanormalDate.com. And use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Hi, it's Greg Cameron from PresidentialUFO.com. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
We have Micah Hanks. We're talking about moonlets, mystery satellites, the sort of thing that Lincoln LaPaz was talking about, the sort of thing that Major Donald Kehoe was looking into. Now, just in passing, because I met Kehoe a few times and interviewed him a couple of times, one thing about Kehoe is that I think his basic belief in UFOs, that they were spaceships, the government knew the answers, I think 95% of the prevailing beliefs in the 21st century about UFOs echo Kehoe for the most part. Would you disagree?
Not at all. Well, I think you're absolutely right.
He formed the paradigm of UFOs. All right. Well, let's go on here. Let's talk about moonlets. Now, moonlets, we're talking about tiny satellites or asteroids, maybe?
Yeah, the general idea, there is some scientific literature about this that over the years has speculated about how a asteroid, you know, a meteor, you know, a large enough space rock could enter Earth's atmosphere and yet not come plummeting down to Earth. Digging into this ufological thing, which we can come back around to a little later, it got me really interested in a tangent phenomena, which really I think has to be understood to really see where we're going with this, which involves the search for Earth's second moon. Gene, did you know that Earth had two moons?
Well, wasn't one of the contactees supposedly from a planet that's opposite the Earth? That's why we never see it?
Yeah, you know, you've heard stories like that over the years, and there have even been speculation about there being a second moon, but not orbiting Earth, an actual satellite orbiting the moon, which we can come back to a little later.
So the moon has a moon.
Well, that was the theory. And actually what I would say is that the Earth technically right now has a second moon, now, which that may sound crazy, but as recently as 2016, yeah, it was confirmed that there was an object that is in, it shares an orbit with the sun, but it's definitely considered to orbit Earth. And so, yes, we have a moonlet right now.
Okay.
So I'll tell you what, we'll take this back and we'll try and understand exactly why people believe that there was a second moon. It goes back to 1846. And at the Toulouse Observatory, there was an object that two observers there had claimed that they had seen. And the director of the observatory there, Frederick Petit, had announced in 1846 that they believed that a second moon existed based on what they'd seen. Now, here's what I speculate. If indeed these space objects can come into orbit around the Earth, and these are the sorts of things that may have been seen in the 1950s, stands to reason that about, you know, 100 years before that, maybe there were astronomers who were seeing them too. But they were fascinated by this, and they thought, well, if we're seeing some object and it's orbiting Earth, maybe there is a moon that is of a different composition from the known moon, and perhaps it therefore doesn't reflect as much light, and we can only see it with proper optical equipment, i.e. telescopes. And so maybe this thing's been essentially a secret second moon. And so by around the 1850s, astronomers were getting kind of interested in this idea. In fact, Jules Verne plays this up in 1865 when he published From the Earth to the Moon. He not only mentions a second moon, but actually credits Petit from the Toulouse Observatory as being the discoverer of that. Gene, that's something you talk about a lot on the program. I love when people tie in these obscure bits of science into their science fiction, and you know, Jules Verne was great at doing that.
I know that Edgar Rice Burroughs did a lot of that when he did his books on Pellucidar, which is about a hollow Earth and a civilization there, about what Mars might be like, that sort of thing.
Yeah, some of my absolute favorite stuff as far as science fiction and fantasy goes. But throughout the 1880s, we continued to see unusual things, and I've really done a lot of mining over the years, trying to find references, whether or not they were accurate in terms of what the observers were seeing, but trying to find references to what were interpreted at the time by astronomers as having been possible sightings of Earth's second moon. And one of the most interesting ones comes from 1881. We had the American polar explorer, Lieutenant Adolphus Greely, and he was in Greenland at the time, and he observed something very strange in the sky and logged this, and it was 10 days after the sun had actually set for the winter at that polar extremity. And so it was believed later by an astronomer from Hamburg named George Waldmath that he had maybe seen Earth's second moon, and Waldmath later went on to become a proponent that this second moon existed. We had other people who had seen something strange, too, in 1884, just 3 years later. We had a weatherman from Canada named E. Stone Wiggins. That's always an interesting name. And he had appeared in print in the New York Tribune and had said that, indeed, he had seen a second moon, but he'd seen it 2 years before that, which would have been only 1 year after Adolphus Greely had seen his in Greenland. And so Wiggins would go on to become this proponent. I mean, maybe one of the greatest of the late 19th century. He believed there was a second moon, and we could predict where it would appear. In 1886, we had this New Zealand report that appeared in the Toronto Globe that described a green crescent moon of the most brilliant yet delicate shade recently seen in New Zealand. They said the phenomenon was visible for only half an hour. It has been seen since in North America, but each time only for about 29 minutes. And so for a while, I mean, it really began to kind of look like there was mounting scientific evidence that a second moon existed. What we seem to know is that time is told otherwise. So one question we have is, what were the objects that these people were seeing? And I do kind of have maybe an idea. I think about that last one, the green crescent that was seen over New Zealand. Would you care to know what that might be?
Lay on me.
There is a phenomena known as the green flash. Are you familiar with this?
Just explain to our listeners.
A lot of people have over the years seen this. If you're looking out over the ocean and you're seeing, for instance, at sunset, just after the sun has gone down, there will be an optical phenomena in which a mirage-like effect produces a greenish, usually because of the band of the spectra, the color spectrum that's most prevalent at this time or under these circumstances, rather. But a greenish little band of light will appear over the horizon. And this is known as the green flash. And so, and you can go online. I just advise you Google that because you can find pictures of it if you've never been in the right place and right time to be able to see this. But I've got a lot of friends who actually have seen this phenomena. And so I kind of wondered if maybe that green crescent moon, if you look at the green flash, it does sometimes have almost kind of a crescent shape. So I kind of wonder if maybe that's what was being seen in 1886 when they saw this thing out there over New Zealand. But people would go on and continue to say that, yeah, we have seen this thing too. In fact, I mentioned George Waldmath. He claimed he himself had actually seen this thing and went so far as to calculate the object's orbit, its motions, And he said it was, once again, too dark to reflect enough light to even become visible to the naked eye. So there were plenty of these reports along these lines that would continue into the 20th century, in which people were trying to find a second moon, but we never were able to find it. So again, one of the questions I think we have to raise here is, if we never found evidence of a second moon, could there have been objects that were being seen that perhaps were more transient? They could appear for a while, and then they could maybe leave Earth orbit for some reason. I don't doubt that some of these people were actually seeing things, but none of them appeared to actually be a conclusive evidence of a second moon. I think we'd know if there was a second moon by today's standards, huh?
Well, the question here is, are these objects natural or artificial, or maybe natural objects that have some kind of artificiality because of construction?
Right, which we might say brings us back to Kehoe, because Donald Kehoe, again, the official military explanation had been that, well, I mean, we want to look and see if there are moonlets in Earth orbit, whether they've been there for a long time, and we just didn't know about it. And now if we can find some technological means by which to spot these things, track them, study them, and perhaps use them, you know, let's use this to our strategic benefit. But there was that opinion. And then Kehoe, who was looking at this from the ufological angle and with the belief that E.T. was visiting Earth, and naturally he says, these are the motherships we're looking for. These are the motherships parked outside Earth's atmosphere, which are sending these drones or scout ships, if you want to call them that, the saucers that guys like Kenneth Arnold have seen. And he says, we found the proof. And so he appeared in the newspapers in 1954, announcing this. And of course, saying very loudly, as he often did, that, yeah, the saucers are here and now we've got new evidence. And that's what Kehoe seemed to believe.
Well, the issue here is Kehoe did count apparent evidence over the years. This proves the UFOs are real, and this is just another example of what that is. We've got more to come with Micah Hanks, Mystery Satellites, Moonlets, whatever. Coming up with Gene and Micah, you're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Neighbors, I want to tell you about my favorite graphics app. It's the award-winning Graphic Converter. You know, Graphic Converter is the universal genius for photo editing on your Mac. Join over 1.5 million loyal users for this Swiss Army knife photo editing app. It gives you all you expect from a top-flight image editing app with tons of features, and most important, it's easy to use. It's also far less expensive than that other app that you can only get by subscription. You know, the one I'm talking about. What's more, you can get 20% off with your order right now. So write this down to learn about Graphic Converter. Go to www.lemkesoft.de/gene. Let me spell that. www.lemkesoft.de/gene.
Did you know there's a new group of water contaminants with unknown health effects? These emerging contaminants lurking in your water may include prescription, over-the-counter drugs, and new types of herbicides and pesticides. ProPure's improved Pro-1G 2.0 filter meets NSF 401 standards to help reduce these emerging contaminants. To find out more, visit your authorized ProPure dealer or ProPureUSA.com. That's ProPureUSA.com.
Now there's a proven powerful anti-inflammatory that absorbs 40 times better. Yes, Nano Curcumin Plus from One Planet Nutrition contains smaller particle size that allows absorption over 40 times better into your bloodstream. Nano Curcumin Plus may also help reduce pain and inflammation, detoxify, and help against heart disease and diabetes. Nano Curcumin Plus is now on sale at OnePlanetNutrition.com. Use promo code GCN for your special discount at OnePlanetNutrition.com. The next generation of nutritional supplementation.
Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body, Brain, and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
All right, guys, we're ready for our four-season sunroom, and Daddy's gonna get a rec room with refreshments.
Oh, no, we'll be sleeping under the stars.
Mom, what about the one with, you know, the fun?
Nice try, little bro. It's a gym. My gym.
Hey, Grandma's getting her Four Seasons garden room. Weather tight and still like being outdoors.
Maybe a living room. Oh, no, wait, a family hub.
Yeah!
No matter what the budget, the season, or the climate, Four Season Sunrooms let you and your family enjoy the outdoors inside. Call now to hear more about these great offers from the premier manufacturer of sunrooms since 1975.
More reasons for four seasons now.
To find out more, call toll-free 800-848-6333. That's 800-848-6333.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson, Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with principal office in Houston, Texas, is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24-7. Call 800-261-0937. That's 800-261-0937.
Hey, this is Marie D. Jones, the author of This Book is from the Future, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Micah Hanks is with us as we progress in our study of a phenomenon that was here years ago, but what about after we started launching satellites? Did these reports of so-called moonlets or other satellites disappear?
They did not. And to me, that's where this really gets perhaps the most interesting, because some of the great luminaries, again, of ufology have observed these mystery objects. And again, we can't, I should point out, Gene, conclusively say that these are asteroids any more than we can really say that they were motherships or whatever, like Kehoe had theorized. I do think, though, that we do have an idea of what some of the later ones were, because you got to figure after around 1957, we're going to start seeing objects that were put in orbit by humans. And, of course, we had certain failed rocket launches, which we also see the debris from these, and this might explain even some of the retrograde satellites. But, you know, let's back up just a moment to, again, 1954, when Kehoe is out there. This is just after the folks down at White Sands have issued their statement. And what they do is they actually go to Clyde Tombaugh, Dr. Clyde Tombaugh, and he was the discoverer of Pluto. Many of the listeners probably know this. He was put in charge of this satellite tracking project by Army Ordnance Research. It was reported in October 1955 in Popular Mechanics that Tombaugh is, quote, closed mouth about his results. He won't say whether or not any small natural satellites have been discovered. He does say, however, the newspaper reports of 18 months ago announcing the discovery of natural satellites at 400 and 600 miles out are not correct. Now, of course, those distances are the same that were given by Kehoe, although it wasn't clear whether they were citing incorrect figures given by the Army or incorrect figures that Kehoe himself had given. But either way, he added, and I quote from the Popular Mechanics article, Tombaugh adds, there is no connection between the search program and the reports of so-called flying saucers. So he very much was playing the skeptic in all of this.
Right, but Tombaugh later on was associated with Kehoe.
Yeah, now that's a good. Maybe I could ask you, do you know if Tombaugh ever became an advocate for belief in flying saucers?
I believe he saw a UFO. He had a sighting going back in the late 1940s, 1949, according
Wait,
to
had
this.
Tombaugh
was an American astronomer who discovered the planet Pluto. On August 20th, 1949, he observed a UFO that appeared as a geometrically arranged group of 6 to 8 rectangles of light, window-like in appearance, and yellowish-green in color, which moved from northwest to southeast over La Cruces, New Mexico. Okay?
Hmm.
So definitely, definitely, there was that connection because he had a sighting.
That's fascinating. Although I seem to think that there was some sort of connection that he may have also had with the famous Lubbock Lights incident. I may be wrong about that. I'll have to get back out to the library here and check out once we're done. I'll have to look at Ruppelt's book on that because I seem to think that Tombo came up in that chapter about the Lubbock incident. But anyway, we know now that he saw his own UFO, so that is kind of interesting. The very guy who had been tracking these so-called natural satellites later saw something that sounded decidedly unlike a satellite. Pretty interesting.
So, yeah, he's one of the people cited by Kehoe as evidence of serious scientists seeing UFOs. And that's an example that he used.
Well, during the satellite study that he had done, of course, you know, he'd said that there not only didn't appear to be any link to the flying saucers, but Tombaugh had also said there further wasn't any existence of any of these near-Earth asteroids. You know, the ones that people had said they were seeing were nowhere to be found. And furthermore, the ones that he had been looking for didn't seem to appear during this period that he was doing this investigation. It's anyone's guess exactly what was going on here, why these things would seem to show up. I referred to them earlier as being transient. But I'll tell you this, Gene. After the Army shuts this down, after Tombo comes out and says, look, we don't see anything here, so we're going to shut down this project, 1957 rolls around. And we have Dr. Luis Corrales of Venezuela's communications ministry, and he'd been observing Sputnik after it. Well, actually, it was the second one, Sputnik 2. But here's the interesting thing. So he knew what he was looking at when he saw Sputnik. And, of course, after 1957, as I noted, many people would be saying, oh, come on, you know, we can expect that there would be man-made objects they might spot, right? So Corrales was watching Sputnik 2 through a telescope when he noticed something else, which was moving east to west, in a retrograde orbit above the Earth, which was obviously not Sputnik. He was looking at Sputnik, and this other object comes along. So he starts watching this, and he's really confused about what this thing is. And then we have, 3 years later, in August of 1960, the Grumman Aircraft Corporation photographs something like this. We have in May of 1961, the following year, the Smithsonian Observatory at Cambridge, Massachusetts, spots an object. They quote that the satellite was first spotted at Jupiter, Florida. An unsuspected, unpredicted, bright satellite, and tracking stations around the world have been asked to help track it. And despite the known objects that were being put in orbit at that time, there were these mystery objects, which, again, the astronomers were saying, these don't look or behave. They don't match the flight paths of known expected objects that we are tracking. So what are these and where do they come from? So, yeah, we did have some of these mystery objects, coming back to your question from earlier, yeah, that actually followed the era when we were putting these things up there and had the technology to do so.
What's curious here is that once we had loads of our own stuff in orbit, more and more every year, this entire issue appears to have faded away, or am I wrong?
Well, I it's interesting because this period, and the reason I think it became of such interest to me is because today, if there were mystery objects in orbit around Earth, you know, there was a recent Japanese operation where they were attempting to try and clean up some of the potentially dangerous space debris around Earth. And they were trying to get up there, and it was reported as being failed. But again, I think that it would just be incredibly difficult to try and remove all or even a majority of the space debris that we have put up there, which potentially may also come crashing back down and at times could be viewed as being dangerous. The bottom line is there's a lot of stuff that we've put up there in Earth orbit. The problem, too, is that if we're looking for something that is not our own, there's a lot more, you know, a lot more noise than there is signal these days. Whereas, presumably back in the early 50s, and this is what really interests me about it, we shouldn't have had that technology to put anything in orbit. So it seems that we must have been looking at something natural, right? Or is there another explanation? You know, one way that some may look at this is the idea of a secret space program. Walter Bosley and some of the others who have been on the show and talk about the idea that there may have been technologies that involved aviation and even early precursors to aeronautics as we know it today, or even aerospace for that matter, that they may have been doing these kinds of things and that may somehow have exceeded what we know or had worked on the periphery of civilization as we know it, hence the term coined by Richard Dolan, breakaway civilization. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that that's the case, but one modern interpretation could be that, well, what if there were technologies kept secret by some clandestine group? And what if in the 50s they were up there and they were orbiting Earth? They had their own manned orbital laboratories. And what if this is what we were seeing? I mean, it gets very speculative, but there are different ways of looking at this. I interpret it as being that they were probably natural. As far as whether the phenomena goes away, that's still a question, because, see, what this all comes back around to is this idea that there is this 13,000-year-old space probe up there of alien origin. And it has a name. It's known, of course, as the Black Knight satellite. Although the moonlets we could talk about all day, I mean, the story that really builds off of that, that became the mythos of the Black Knight satellite, is even weirder. And it involves everything from messages from space and all of this kind of stuff to Nikola Tesla. I mean, it's even more bizarre than just the search for the moonlets. But I think that it begins there. And if you want to see a continuation, the advocates, the proponents of the existence of that so-called Black Knight satellite, they would tell you, of course, it's continued today. And that's what we're dealing with.
Okay, so let's go back to the history of the Black Knight satellite.
Without going back to what we've already looked at, again, we can see that from the 1850s onward, there was an interest among astronomers to try and track various kinds of objects that they were seeing in orbit. And much as I was kind of putting the idea out that, hey, there could be a breakaway civilization, and some modern UFO enthusiasts who ascribed to that idea would view this kind of retrospectively as being, and that's what they were really seeing, not moonlets or anything, they were seeing actual spacecraft somebody was operating. I think that there had been UFO proponents over the years that looked back at these early reports from the 19th century, and they thought the same thing, but they were going more along the lines of thought that Kehoe would have advocated, that there was something up there circling the Earth. And see, what's interesting is we do have these instances where, for instance, we go back to 1899, okay? Nikola Tesla. It was said every day that he liked to monitor these emissions, these frequencies, which I think we now believe were probably radio emissions from deep space. Well, not that deep, really, probably coming from Saturn or something along those lines. But at the time, Tesla had been of a mind to say, these could be radio transmissions from an extraterrestrial intelligence out there. And so he'd sit there, and the story goes, of course, this may be somewhat apocryphal, but the story goes he would sit there and be reading the newspaper in the mornings, and he would listen to these radio transmissions as though he were listening to a radio with alien voices.
Okay. Let's talk about the alien voices after you hear these voices. With Gene and Micah, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Many medicines used to treat colds and flu contain acetaminophen, a pain reliever and fever reducer found in hundreds of over-the-counter and prescription medicines. But taking too much or more than one medication containing acetaminophen per day can damage your liver. So always read the label and don't take acetaminophen if you drink three or more alcoholic drinks every day. To learn more, visit fda.gov/OTC pain info. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Food and Drug Administration.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey Purified Water. The Berkey Guy provides the lowest price filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.